Richard's the life and soul of this match singles night. Confident, charming. I can see why he sets some hearts racing, but my eye's on Matt. Shy, super cute and just a little awkward. But that's exactly what I like about him.
Meet other singles at our match events. Join Match Free today. 18 and over. Additional fees and subscriptions apply. See match.com for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione, and I don't know, the music just won't stop. Oh, no, that was somebody else's. Okay. But that's okay.
There we go. Hi, Russ.
Anthony's there, and Mike's there. How you guys doing?
Good evening, gentlemen.
That was an auspicious beginning. So let's get right into it. We had the Flyers and the Leafs match up tonight, So they thought there would be a matchup, and this is a weird thing. Yeah, for two periods. But I think the Flyers are like 2-3-1 on the first half of back-to-backs, and then they're 3-0-1 on the second half of back-to-backs. But it just seemed like I was at the Princeton game, so I only saw some video clips and listened to the entire third period and then just watched some highlights. But this was a game that just defensively just kept getting worse, and then the discipline was bad.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. It was just one of those contests where you had that sort of feeling that anything could break open in any direction. The way the game was sort of played. Certainly, first period was pretty wild. Second period, Philly really was, I thought, did a great job in the second period, and then the wheels just came off in the third. And again, to Toronto's credit, I think there was new Toronto players got their first markers in this one? There was like three or four players with their first goal.
Four.
Four players. So I mean, it was definitely third period was definitely a mess, especially for the road team.
Yeah, including the immortal Martin Marincin.
Yes.
But you know the thing was,
which by the way, I have to say this: Martin Marincin, Coetzee on Philly radio made that shot seem like it was Bobby Hull. And I know the player, so I was like laughing when I heard it. Like, oh no, Steve Mason couldn't possibly stop this. This was unbelievable, this shot. It was funny.
Yeah, well, Steve Mason was pretty porous. And I think that was the key word of the night, porous, because in the first period, the Leafs' defense was horrific. Simmons gets the goal, Konechny, pretty soon after. I think it was less than 30 seconds, and then the Leafs tied up late in the first. And I thought the Leafs defensively they tightened up as the game went along, and it seemed that was the exact opposite for the Flyers. And Steve Mason didn't help because Mason did his best Justin Pogge imitation. He was horrific in the third period.
Yeah, and he's had those. I mean, he's had. Earlier on in the season, I thought he had games where his stats didn't look good, but he made some key critical saves early in the season. He just at the moment is really, and tonight was certainly an example of one of his when he gets out of whack, the dam breaks open on him pretty quickly. And well, again, I don't think it's necessarily time. I'm sure Flyer fans right now are you look online, it's like, hey, let's bring Anthony Stolarz up and trade Mason for a seventh round pick. And it's just like, I can literally feel the eyes rolling up into the back of my head on that.
Yeah.
But that said, Mason's, this is where, and I said this the other night, Kim Dillabaugh's really, he's got to really be getting, the Flyers goaltending coach really needs to figure out what's going on with these guys right now. Again, the defense is not particularly good, but that said, I think the goaltending for Philadelphia has to improve before long because, again, it is just that psychological effect that occurs for a team that if they think their goaltender doesn't have the back end held down, they're not able to compensate for that.
Yeah, there's a couple things on the stat sheet that jumped out to me, and I'm not a huge stat sheet guy all the time, but when you see that Steve Mason had three giveaways and one takeaway, that's bad. when you see that Claude Giroux was 46% on faceoffs or 48%, that's horrible. So when you see things like that's definitely not a help, especially if you're losing defensive zone faceoffs and things like that. But I will say, you know, Shane Gostisbehere was a -2. We had talked about how his defense hasn't really improved this year. And I'll admit, he doesn't have the greatest partners, but he's got to ramp it up a little bit too.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Gostisbehere, again, they're going to have to sort of figure things out. And again, this is now year two for Gostisbehere, and now he can't be you know, the player that catches up, you know, that everybody has to figure out and catch up to. Now everybody's got plenty of film on him from last season. They know they target him because they know he's a threat. And again, defensively, that again, as you stated, defensively, that's always going to be a bit of a concern. If he's got, you know, superior talent like he had when with Team North America during the World Cup, he looks like a world beater. But again, you've got to find sort of that balance. And again, his partners so far have not been incredibly good. And again, we're going to have to see how that goes during the season. Is it a sophomore slump? Again, probably a little too early to tell for that. But again, these are the things that he's going to have to adapt to.
Right. I mean, he's a young defenseman, and he's going to have to adjust. But, you know, when the veteran defenseman, like a guy like Delzato, gets completely undressed by Nazem Kadri on the first goal. I mean, so much so that it was a flashback to the Rangers Delzato and the defenseman that I'm sure John Tortorella has nightmares still about. I mean, you can't have your veteran guys just getting walked around like that, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you, I'm watching the Chicago-Washington game, and there's a shot, it deflects off a Washington defenseman, Marion Hosh is at like the right hash mark, goes right on his stick, and they tie it with 22 seconds. Like, it's just, and Washington was playing a good game. Like, this is where it looks like this is going to be a really good year for the Blackhawks. It does.
Well, Stan Bowman has sold his soul to the devil. They just, you know, they just seem to, you know, they get Alex DeBrincat in the second round. They get somebody to take, certain players off their roster. It's like he's got, there might be a video review here or something.
Yeah, there's a video review. It's just like maybe he's good, Mike.
Chess and
I
checkers.
Mean, maybe,
it's chess. Yeah, he's maybe playing chess. Everybody else in the conference is playing checkers.
Yeah, I do like that. So, all right, so getting back to the Flyers-Leafs game, now, again, I'm going to go by the radio broadcast on this one, Mike, but it seemed like Matthews may have flubbed a chance or two to get a goal, but then after he flubbed that chance or two, really got some nice chances to get a goal, and so it seemed like he was pretty well in the game offensively.
Well, ironically, the line that he was on, which has been stagnant the last few games, him with Zach Hyman and William Nylander, they really did not do well. And when it was 3-2 in the second period, Mike Babcock got the mix master out and started shuffling the line combos, put Connor Brown on that line, and that seemed to spur them on a bit. They moved Nylander to another line. And, Hyman gets his first goal of the year, and Matthews had a couple chances on that scramble before Hyman put it in. But I think that line played better once they moved Nylander off of it. And the funny thing was, I made a suggestion on Twitter that everybody blew up about because, you know, Nylander has 2 assists in his last 6 games after getting off to one of the best starts of any rookie this year. He's sort of been just a disappearing act the last few games, and that was sort of like what he did in the Calder Cup playoffs last May. He disappeared in the middle of the playoffs, and Sheldon Keefe, his coach, had to really call him out. Next game he scores a hat trick. It might be time where Babcock has to call him out or sit him down for a game, or maybe something more dramatic like sending him down for a couple games. But people just seem to be horrified at the suggestion. But he's the type of guy where you have to keep on him. He's that type of player.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I will give Nazem Kadri some credit because even though he totally toasted Michael Delzato on that first goal, it does look like he's got a little more speed this year, Mike, than he did previously. I wonder, did he lose some weight? There's something going on with him because he did look like his two-step quickness is a little better than it used to be.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I think he's always been quick, but he's not a blazer. He's not somebody who flies. He's got jump. He's got a good quick first step, but he's not somebody who like a Marner or McDavid flies past people. But
no, I'm not saying that. But he had enough to get past Delzato fairly easy. And
yeah,
after that,
Delzato was flat-footed on that play. That's what I said. He walked around him. He caught him. You know, I think maybe shifting his weight or something like that because he blew by him, but I don't think it was because of Kadri's blazing speed. I think it was just Delzato misplayed that opportunity.
Okay. And what else did you see when you were looking at the third period besides maybe having to get the vomit bucket?
Well, again, for me, bringing the only thing was for me is that I didn't get 100% chance to watch the third period. I kind of got to the second period and watched only a short bit of it before I had to get the take care of some other things, obviously prepping for tonight. But I will say that from what I did see, again, vomit bucket probably with regards to the defense and the goaltending is an accurate description from what I could say.
I mean, the thing that's going to be interesting now is, you know, now you have Delzato back. He's been back for three games. The defense hasn't really gotten better.
It hasn't. And that's the thing. Everybody thinks that, you know, they tag it on, you know, well, if you take McDonald out of the lineup or you take Schultz out of the lineup. And, again, it's just if you look at the defense as a whole – again, it comes down to there is no number one bellwether defenseman that you can look at and say, this is your guy, this is your stopper. Delzato, again, and we can break out all the advanced numbers that we want with regard to the, you know, but again, the Flyers' defense is what it is right now. It still remains what we've known it to be the last several years, which is a blue line very much that is still in transition, going from the high salary veterans that Paul Holmgren had put on the roster to the prospects that are coming up right now. They're still in between. It doesn't have quite. It's a defense that doesn't have an identity in my mind. You have some players on that blue line. You got a Radko Gudas, obviously. Brings, you know, he's the one guy on that defense there. You could say, you know, obviously what he's bringing, whether you like it or not. And you look at it, but again, you got a young defenseman like Ivan Provorov still finding his way.
Although he had a great game, he had two takeaways, five block shots, but then it sort of begs the question, like, I want Radko Gudas blocking six shots. Do I want Provorov blocking five shots? I don't know if I want that.
I'm personally no, but again, when your defense is, you know, talent level wise, what it is, and you feel that's what's necessary, and I think if you believe your goaltender also is having difficulties, and your goaltender behind is having difficulties, I think the mindset then of the defenseman is, I need to stop this puck. I got to be the goaltender out on the ice here, you know, and trying to get the puck as far away from my struggling goaltender as possible. And I do think that sometimes plays in the minds of defensemen. And again, a guy like Provorov is going to be staying up for the year, but again, he wants to show to Dave Haxtell that he's, you know, going to sell out if necessary to make sure that he can continue to remain on roster and justify the decision the Flyers did by keeping him up.
Now, Mike, did Mike Babcock sort of pump the tires of Frederick Anderson? Because he only gave up three goals, and if you remember, I thought he'd give up five in this one and maybe, you know, get a 6-5 win, a 5-4 loss, something like that. So, do we count this as a good game for Anderson? What do you think?
Well, he usually pumps the tires for Anderson because they have a lot riding on him, and it was a weak first period, but then he slowly improved. And I'm sure I didn't hear all the post game remarks, but I'm sure he pumped the tires of Morgan Rielly, who had his career high four points. But they got a lot of points. Their defense activated a lot tonight, and they got a lot of points out of their blue line. Connor Carrick, Marinson, they all got at least a point. The one thing is like I looking at the Flyers. I mean, I will grant the point that they're inexperienced and they're having. You know, I think they're now 30th in the NHL in terms of goals against. But I would rather have that organizational depth with Provorov, Gostisbehere, and then Sanheim and Moran in the pipeline than what the Leafs have. because I mean, right now the Leafs have Riley and a couple other decent defensive prospects in the minors, but one or two others in the NHL, and then it's pretty barren. So I mean, I envy the Flyers with what depth they have.
Yeah, no question. So just to finish off this Caps game, it looks like Jay Beagle got the game winner in overtime, and he had a two-goal night. So the Blackhawks, they get a point. The Caps get the win. That's a pretty big win for the Caps. I mean, that's something where they overcame some adversity, and we have to sort of give them a little credit there, Ant. Like maybe they'll be a little notch above what they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, I had good feelings about the Caps last year, certainly working under Trotz, and I feel like another year, again, that was that defensive consciousness that he brings to that team, mindset-wise, and emphasizing all four lines. It's, again, they're my pick to go to the final this year, at least out of the East, and I'm going to hold to that. I feel like last year, again, the last several years, they've just continuously had to eat that bitter pill. Again, some of it, obviously, their own fault in many circumstances,
mm-hmm.
but I do believe that the Caps are primed, I think, to finally make a deep run here, and I do think it's gonna. My gut is that I think it's gonna happen this year.
Go ahead. You're gonna say the window what?
The window is, to me, in a sense, the window is closing a little bit for the Caps. You know, you got Oshie and Justin Williams and Alzner in the last year of their contracts. They're probably gonna have to. You know, Oshie and Williams will be gone, and they'll probably spend the money to re-sign Alzner. But I think, in a sense, there's a little bit of a window closing here because I don't think the team after this year will be as strong as they are right now.
Yep. All right, Mike, we're going to have to bid a farewell to you tonight. We appreciate it. Go back and watch the videotape. Evander Kane had a 4-minute double minor that didn't aid him in the loss necessarily, but just made his appearance known. So you could have some fun watching that in Buffalo. And thanks as always. Now we're going to switch gears here. We're going to invite on Fox Sports 1 anchor, reporter, and friend, Julie Stewart-Bing. Julie, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great to be on.
Good. Now, I really don't follow soccer, but I was catching wind. Now, did I hear that the U.S. won? Is that what happened?
Well, no. Sadly, the USA
no.
lost in Columbus for the first time in 15 years, 2-1. So that was a big that hurt tonight. It doesn't mean
okay.
a whole lot of bad things because they're still in World Cup qualifying and it'll be fine in the long run. But it's still 3 points that they lose, especially to a huge rival. And I also just want to apologize. I am on the mean streets of Broadway, right? Lower Broadway in Nashville right now. So I apologize if it is very loud.
No, you're good.
Before you know exactly what I'm talking about. So thanks.
No, you're fine. I guess I fell for the teaser on the radio station. I thought maybe they won. So let's talk a little Ducks. They're an interesting team because when I watched the Columbus game, I was just dying to see where their offense would come from. And then, you know, they play against Carolina. And they did have offense. They have a great defensive crew, obviously deep in their system. They've got kids like Montour and Theodore. What is it going to take? And I think Randy Carlyle is an excellent coach, but is he playing too much of a defensive system, or is the offense just sort of slow and just being good again this year?
I mean, that's a great question because he's definitely trying to get the offense going. Everything he said to us has been, you know, trying to get those fast starts. That has been a huge point that they've just tried to hit over the head of these guys. And we saw even in Carolina the other night, they didn't have a fast start. Like, they didn't
right.
even have a shot on net for the first 10 minutes of the game. And that was the number one focal point he told me that we need to do. And I mean, he's trying to figure out, he's mixing up the lines a bit. He got, you know, he put Ricardo Kell sort of all over the place. He's now on left
mm-hmm.
wing, and that's sort of where he likes where he's going to be. But as you said, you know, having Hampus Lindholm for defense has actually been incredible. But they got a great deep court. He's just trying to figure out with some of the mixing the vets, some of the young guys, like getting that offensive chemistry and continuity, because I mean, I've been here for, that was only my second win I've been a part of, because I've had to jump out for a bit of soccer games, but it has been up
right.
and down. It'll be a 4-0 win, a 4-0 loss, a 6-1 win to, like, you know, an overtime loss. So it's been, we're still trying to figure out sort of the identity of this team right now, because it's a bit different from last year.
Julie, in terms of the difference in terms of style of play that the Ducks are playing between, obviously transitioning from Bruce Boudreau to Randy Carlyle this year, based on your observations, what are the biggest differences that you're noticing in the team's play?
You know, I would say I wouldn't notice like a whole lot different. I mean, I think the difference is seeing what Randy Carlyle is different as a coach, because the one thing we noticed and that our play-by-play guy Johnny Allers picked up was that the other night against Columbus, that was one of Randy Carlyle's, it might have been his first, but his first overtime he's ever had to experience, because he wasn't coaching in the league last year. And so just in terms of, like, figuring out the dynamics and who to play and what the game plan is, and he's become – you know, he was always about having a heavy game and playing a dump and chase type of style, and it's much more, of course, like the puck possession, the forecheck, you know, playing on the inside, all that. And you know, hockey is hockey is hockey. Like, every team, every player,
yeah.
like, you play to your systems, you play to the players you have, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is really the same. And yet, I think it's going to take, at least for me watching this team, going to take at least, I know we're like 15 games in, but maybe like 30 games to figure out kind of just the identity with him, because it seems like sometimes they're just like last game we saw the checking line, the Kessler, Cogliano, Silverberg line really step up and be able to figure things out. And Kessler, I think, has been the best player on this team so far, just, you know, defensively, offensively, but just trying to figure out with all the lines, what does that mean? And you've had so many guys kind of go up and down, the Joseph Cramarosas, Michael Scarbosa, who is the Chris Wagner and Ryan Garbutt and all these? Like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out sort of what this team wants, but what this team really is.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw Garbutt a few weeks ago. I do like the fit there. I think the greasiness of him is pretty good, and he's a guy that just once in a while will get you some points. But Silverberg is a guy that I think it kind of puzzling to me that he sits on your fourth line, because I know he had 20 goals last year, but early on I thought this guy was going to be a little bit more of a complete player, a little bit more of a playmaker besides being a goal scorer. And now it just looks like he's being relied on as being a goal scorer. Now, he started off great. I mean, he's got 9 points in 15 games. I mean, this is a good start for him, and he's already got 5 goals. What do you think? Do you think he's at 26, it's starting to click for him? And do you think that we might see him in a situation where maybe he could, you know, get a few more points besides just being a goal guy?
And this is Silverberg you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I think that Silverberg has incredible offensive capabilities. And I was talking with the guys last night just about his evolution, him and the line, their chemistry together, because it's not just one guy when Silverberg's getting a goal. It's all three of them that have really been able to kind of force that offense. But I think with Silverberg, the biggest question is he is so streaky. Like last year, we didn't see him get a goal for weeks and weeks on end, and then once he catches fire, he goes for a while. So right now, he's had a great, I mean, you know, he ended the preseason really well, had, you know, a bit quiet the first couple games, then has done really, really well. But what does he do going forward? And talking with some of my coworkers, I said, we wouldn't be surprised if he went quiet for the next 7 games, because that's just the kind of guy he is. And for him, it's going to be about figuring out the consistency with his offense, and he's a smart player. He really is, like, you know, being able to, you know, just in front of the net or whatever key pass it is, he can do so much. But I think it's just some of their parts, like that line together. And Andrew Cogliano was sort of like on the outside of the other night's game, because he was such a key facet in all of the plays, basically, for most goals except for the final one. But I think Silverberg has the capability of being, you know, a definitely a 20-plus goal scorer, maybe even like 30 if he can keep it up, which is sort of the big question. And then who knows if he's trade bait or whatnot in the future.
Right.
Julie, throughout the offseason, I don't think there was a day or two that went by where we didn't hear Cam Fowler's name in the rumor mill possibly getting moved out. Now, obviously, going into the season, 15 games in, he's having, you know, offensively, certainly off to a fantastic start with 10 points. He's been a power play weapon for them with 6 points, 6 points on the power play. Do you think some of that conversation is going away with Fowler? Or do you still think that there is the potential in the future for them to continue to entertain talks?
I think 100% it's going away. And I said Ryan Kisler is the best player on the team, but I disagree with myself right now. Cam Fowler has been the best player on this team without a doubt from the first game until now. He has been, he's always sort of thought of, a bit of an offensive defenseman, but he has taken his game to the next level, and he has carried the team and gotten them goals and gotten them points and also just kept the morale up when it wasn't there. And for him, I mean, there was talk in the summer there was talk last year about if you traded a Cam Fowler, could you get a Taylor Hall? Well, without a doubt, you could definitely get a Taylor Hall for that. I'm sorry, Kurt, I'm on – this is a Lower Broadway special. Let me get back to Cam Fowler. I don't think Cam Fowler is in any trade discussions right now, and if he is in the future, it would be for a much bigger trade, for a much bigger margin of, whatever is out there. The biggest question is when Nate Thompson and, whatever is going on with Simone Dupre comes to fruition.
Uh-huh.
And how that affects then what Bob Murray has going on with the salary cap. Because right now everything evens out. You've got everything sort of clicking, and you start getting this going, you get the momentum going. It's just when that happens, which probably is around January, February, you're going to have a lot of questions. But I don't think Cam Fowler is going anywhere. I wouldn't want to see Cam going anywhere. He's definitely like a huge part of the locker room and the heartbeat and everything.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm not sure there's a better puck mover either in the league right now, just watching him. But here's my last question for you. I've had to defend John Gibson. I don't know why. There are some people that seem to only focus in on when he has a bad game, and then when he's playing well and they keep winning, they don't really talk about him. He's not even played like a full NHL season in his, game-wise in his career, and I've always been impressed with him. What do you think about Gibson's play? And then we'll let you go.
Yeah, no, I like Gibson as a goaltender. Like, I've seen him, since he was younger. I was in the room with the Boston Bruins when they interviewed him when he was in the combine, and just seeing him grow from a young kid to now. He definitely has more to develop. As you said, you can't judge him fully yet. He has not gone through a full season as a number one. And I think you need to – I don't know if it's too early to give him that. I mean, you go sort of – Randy Carlyle said he is the number one, and Jonathan Bernier will back him up when need be. Or, maybe it's a 1A, 1B as we saw last year. Whoever knows how it goes. Well, Gibson, what I notice is that he is someone that you notice him when he makes big saves, because – He has the capability to come up and make big saves, but he always seems to be flustering, out of goal, he's sort of flailing all over the place, making, and I've talked with our goalie coaches and our goalie analysts, what is it about him that is good or bad? And some of them have said it's just that his positioning is a bit off, and it's completely different from Bernier, not good or bad, but that he makes sometimes things look more difficult for himself. And that's when you see, if he gets scored on, it looks like he's completely on the other side of the net, or he's, jumping to kind of get back in place. Completely different from watching a guy like Carey Price or not. That's very difficult to make a comparison from John Gibson to Carey Price. But I know with Gibson, I think also off the ice, you need to see a bit of his maturity and goalies are all different, but he still is a young kid. And when you talk to him, he's quiet, and he's a different kind of cat. And sometimes he doesn't look like he's that into it, but that's just who he is. And I've talked to him about it. And he's just like, I'm just a simple guy, And so people got to stop reading a bit more into that. But I agree that give him a full season, but again, in the NHL,
yeah,
the leash isn't that long. And so you kind of see where
true.
That goes. But I think they're going to see, if it's not Bern, if it's not John Gibson, they at least have a quality backup in Bernier.
They do.
To fill that role. Yeah.
They do. Well, listen, Julie, thanks for coming on. Have a good time tonight. Everybody should catch you on Fox Sports 1. You do a great job with soccer. You do a great job with the in-game stuff with Anaheim. And thanks so much, and I'll see you down the road.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me on. Sorry I'm in the midst of the ye old drunken Friday night of Broadway.
That's
of course,
okay.
I'm not one of those people at all.
Of
know.
Course not. No,
but yeah, hopefully we'll catch up again on this later down the road.
Okay. Take care.
Take care, Julie.
All right, Ant. So that's going to end the show. And, boy, we covered a lot of ground. It was good to cover one
mm-hmm.
of those West Coast teams, and because, you know, a
Definitely.
Lot of times we stay focused on the East Coast. So we'll in the next week or two, we'll try and maybe get some Chicago Blackhawks coverage on here to satisfy
mm-hmm.
some of our other fans. But right now,
yeah.
that's it. We'll I'll see what the Flyers look like tomorrow night. Maybe you will too. And
we both will actually. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we'll go
we'll
from
see
there.
See where they're at after this.
Yeah, we'll definitely see where they're at. That's going to end this, this off the post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.